can just hold on tonight. I know that nothing, nothing survives. Nothing survives. I think I'm turning. She's my friend of all friends. She's still here. Everyone's gone. She doesn't have to say a thing. We'll just keep laughing all night long. All night long. Just a simple line. I can still hear it all of the time. I can just hold on tonight. I know that no one, no one survives. No one survives.
Right, that does it for me and Heartbreak Motel. Stay tuned now for music for human beings.
مرحبا في ميوزك فور هيومن. I am a doctor جالس السكران here percolating with you. And across from me, vaporizing, is Professor Levine, Jewish mystic professor.
Hello.
Welcome, Professor.
Oh, and it's such a wonderful and bubbly pleasure of mine to be back. Unfortunately, I did miss last week as I was out on an expedition.
On a spirit journey.
Spirit and body journey.
It was multifaceted.
Yes, but I am so bubbly happy to be back.
Well, it is wonderful to have you back also, Professor, because there have been so many moments in life where one grows close to another person and then there is a shift in life. These shifts happen often and simply is part of existing, part of life.
Yes, it's something I've thought about myself in my own meditations and studies. The fact that as we progress along this journey that is life, we undergo changes. Our personality and our spirit often shift, become fossilized and ossified, or transmute and mutate. And it's something that in our daily existence sometimes is hard to feel and to understand because we get so wrapped up in what's happening every single day. And of course, living in the moment is something we advocate in New Age thought, but sometimes it's also good to have a broader perspective on the kinds of shifts that have occurred to us.
These shifts, I wonder if there is any way to prevent them from happening or from being so intense. My reflections have told me that the only way really to avoid this intensity of feeling is to prevent myself from becoming attached earlier.
Attached to the world and
to anything in the world.
I see, detachment. Well, it's interesting because I think as children we all are very attached to little things. We look forward to our next birthday party and our next cake and recess, and we really enjoy all those little things, and we're also very emotional. Kids, of course, are known to cry on a fairly regular basis. And one of the interesting observations that I've made is that adults cry far less frequently than children, and they generally keep their emotions much more bottled up deep inside them. They become more creatures of habit and of daily life. And I've often thought that it would be wonderful if we could reach back into our childlike existence sometimes and re-experience the wonder, the joy, and the emotion of being a child again.
I think that part of the innocence of being a child is not being aware of the risk that one takes when one becomes overly committed to a particular thing. So, I as a child particularly enjoyed where I was living until I was forced to move the first time, and then I hesitated to enjoy the new place as much. And it's important to find, I think, things that you can enjoy in every place that you are.
So learning to be flexible, learning flexibility and adaptation, the ability to adapt to changing circumstances
and to be supple spiritually. And actually, this reminds me of something that you said earlier, which is that if a person really wishes to become detached, it is possible to be attached to the world, but important not to be attached to any particular thing or aspect within the world.
Well, I wonder if one can become attached in a certain sense of enjoying things, but not attached in the sense of not being able to adapt if that thing is taken away. To me, that would be the optimal scenario, where one can enjoy the things of life to their full, yet not be perturbed when those things in life that are pleasurable change or diminish in some way. I've read that most people become happier as they age. They learn how to be happy with what exists around them. But I think some people also become less happy. Some people, whatever problem they have, whatever little personality trait which is causing problems as a child, leads to a chain reaction where eventually they transmogrify and turn into something which they never intended, very far from their childhood-like innocence. And I think it's important to be able to recognize those kinds of chains of events.
Or behavioral or spiritual loop where one can become trapped in a particular pattern of thinking, and how terrifying it can be to be unable to escape from a loop.
Yes, and I think this is one of the teachings of Yoda, if I'm not mistaken. I forget the exact sequence, but I believe it starts with fear. Is it fear leads to hate?
Which leads later to the loss of energy, which leads to hunger, and this leads back to eating, and that leads to fear.
I don't think that was the exact sequence.
I cannot
in the Star
also
Wars
remember,
movies,
but I think that arbitrarily there are loops. There are always loops, because we are creatures of habit, so we always are behaving in a similar way.
But we also start to unfold in a certain way. One pattern of behavior leads to changing circumstances, which then leads to another pattern of behavior. So they have these chain of events. I mean, if one thinks of, let's say, Bernie Madoff, the famous proprietor of the Ponzi scheme hedge fund, I imagine that when he first started off in finance, his goal was not to create a Ponzi scheme hedge fund, but it somehow, his vanity and his greed got the better of him at a weak moment, and that sort of that inertia propelled him to become a massive criminal.
I've heard this term Ponzi repeatedly recently. What is a Ponzi?
Well, I believe Ponzi is related to Fonzie from Happy Days. And I'm not entirely sure what the relationship is.
A Fonzie, of course, is the very boisterous, confident character.
Or the Fonz.
The Fonz.
Now, I wonder if maybe the Fonz actually comes from Ponzi, and it was an Arab person who couldn't pronounce the P.
So it became Bonzi.
Bonzi.
It's possible.
Or Fonzie.
We are listening to this beautiful Robert Carty, who has sent us some beautiful work earlier, and unfortunately these albums which have served us so faithfully are sitting and flaking in front of me. So it is wonderful to try to be able to enjoy them even briefly, because it may be the last time that we can hear these very complex and beautiful melodies.
Yes, these melodies remind me of a dream I once had several decades ago, where I was swimming in a pool of water in a forest by myself in the nude. And I swam through these sparkling waters with the rays of the sun glancing through the treetops onto my naked back. And then I did the backstroke so the sun glanced onto my naked front. And then I did the side stroke, so the sun glanced onto my naked side. And then I flipped over and did the side stroke on the other side.
So that, and then, of course,
the sun.
You did the floating so that the sun could gaze upon your naked cranium.
Ah, yes, my crown.
And then you did the upside down also, so that the sun could gaze upon the naked
soles of my feet.
The feet.
Yes. And I tried every configuration that was possible so the sun could kiss every part of my body.
But really, truthfully, so much of you is inside, and it's difficult to imagine that what would happen is a person would have to open themselves in order to be really exposed, or to spiritually open oneself and permit the sun to enter.
That's right, and this submersion underwater is often used as a metaphor for the extent of the soul, which is visible versus non-visible. One can imagine a giant glacier where only the small little top of the glacier appears above the water, but underneath is the massive bulk of this glacier. And likewise, the human soul or psyche is only exposed in a very minute amount to the outside world, to ourselves and to others. And the rest is deeply, deeply submerged. And of course, I think one of the goals and aims of New Age philosophy and thought is to allow that deep submersion to come up out of the water and receive the rays of light from the sun, to allow ourselves to be exposed in some deeper level with other human beings and creatures. And of course, we'd love if some callers would be able to call in and expose their own souls to us and to the rest of our listening audience.
Of course, that sort of exposure is always something that we enjoy to expose and to be exposed. The number for exposure is 617-253-8810. And again, we're listening to this really glorious Robert Carty, and I think later we'll be listening to some new offerings that were made available to me by some musicians, were recommended, I should say, because it was not the author himself who submitted the work to me. But very unusual, but I will, of course, reserve judgment to the listener.
Well, of course, as I mentioned already, this music in particular reminded me of that experience in the stream of water. And it'd be great if any of our listeners, if there are any today, could comment on what memories our music evokes for them.
For me, water. Water, which has become less mystical to me than it was when I was a child. For it was so rare. I recall the first time I gazed upon the ocean. The first time that the reality that my family and my teachers had up to that point attempted in their own way to explain to me. I was not sure even if it was something they had experienced. But a world of water so vast that it was like the desert. And And even to this day, in spite of that experience, water retains some of the original mystical quality that it enjoyed.
Well, I wonder if you have ever been out on the expanse of ocean in some vessel. This is truly an amazing experience. As you can see all around you, nothing but water. And as far as your sensory experience is concerned, water is the only thing that exists in the world.
I've always found those sorts of experiences to be particularly challenging to my view of the universe and myself. Can be very show one how fragile one's grasp on their own existence is. I think now would be a good time to try out that piece that was mentioned to me before. The piece regards a man's convergence, shifting existence. What Professor Levine earlier, I believe, referred to as transmogrification, changing of one's mogros.
Yes, the mogros in ancient Zoroastrian philosophy, of course, refers to the esophagus, which is considered the main tract of spiritual energy in the body.
And it is a very, very important part of the body. Let us listen now.
The lead lunges, I shy fucking up. Over the top of gray tableland.
momentum masterfully. Out on the flat, flat, make the legs po, po, po. Racing hard to run me down, following fast over the open ground. High rock faster must.
It's very, very unusual and certainly very different from what we ordinarily would listen to on Music for Human.
Yes, it is probably not our normal fare.
Certainly, certainly not. And I personally, it's not really my type of music that I like to listen to when I am driving or meditating or butchering animals or, you know, preparing a meal. But I can, I think, appreciate that everyone's tastes differ.
Yes, some people like black licorice, some people like the red licorice.
I've never met anyone who likes, no, I'm exaggerating, very few people like the black
licorice. Oh, I happen to like, I prefer the black to the red. I am a licorice man myself, a real licorice man.
Licorice. I've always found it to be very soothing also to eat licorice.
I do find it soothing also to have a sort of ritual in one's eating habits, that one eats the same substance for breakfast every day. I myself have a sort of interesting breakfast diet where I consume a single toasted piece of pita bread along with hummus, turkey, carrots, grapefruit juice, tabbouleh, and cheese. Occasionally sardines as well.
Sardines are excellent.
And very few people have matched my breakfast appetite. I find that breakfast is the most spiritually important meal of the day.
Periods of my life eaten quite a lot for breakfast, or ultimately have found the idea of food in the morning to be quite nauseating.
Yes, I find it takes about an hour or so after awakening for my appetite to be opened up fully.
To bloom.
The bloom, exactly.
And then at some point,
I first water it with a bit of coffee, and then it blooms after about 1 hour.
Moisten
the appetite.
The appetite.
Moisten the esophagus a little.
Now, of course, it is very strange what sorts of things will endear one to food, or to make one feel that the food is really not to be eaten. And you mentioned licorice before. When I first tried to buy licorice, which I loved in my youth, in another country, and I saw the name, it seemed so much like liquor to me that I was unable to purchase it. It was a very long time before I was comfortable enough with the name in order to purchase the licorice.
Well, I myself have some guilt associated with licorice, I must admit. Several decades ago, I stole a bag of licorice from a roommate of mine. I was in a state of intoxication, let's say, from inhalation.
Ritual
inhalation. And I scoured the pantry for some food, preferably something sweet and soft and chewy. And I found my roommate's bag of licorice. And I took the bag of licorice. I snuck it out of the pantry without his permission or knowledge. And I consumed the entire bag in the space of 20 minutes.
licorice. Very delicious.
This was black licorice, I might add, but it was Australian licorice. And Australian licorice is extremely nice.
Very potent.
Very potent and soft and chewy. And I find that when one has inhaled ritually, then often the pleasures of soft, chewy, sweet food can be greatly enhanced.
It's true. Let me once again, textures and memories that are associated with food and their names, all of these can contribute, I think, to enjoyment. The colors.
I wonder if we can actually recall those foods that, as a child, meant a lot to us. I know that children often will have very strong preferences where they really desire a certain kind of food. And perhaps if their parents are concerned for their health, may not allow them to eat those foods very frequently. I myself, I think, as a child, had a particularly strong craving for barbecued potato chips. And it's funny that now, as an adult, when I can eat barbecued potato chips whenever I want to, they no longer hold that special place in my heart anymore.
Because it has become something that is common due to overuse, overexposure.
Yes.
A friend also had a similar experience with a particular yogic meditation practice. He found that after a great deal of reapplication, that he was no longer learning.
In fact, he may have become addicted to that meditation, where if he didn't have his daily fix, he would then feel out of sorts and odd. It's sort of a dilemma and a paradox that we're all faced with. I think everything that we enjoy in life becomes less enjoyable when we have it too frequently.
It's true. So there must be some minimum amount of struggle and suffering in life for it to seem meaningful.
I think that's true. I believe in that.
I think again about these friends that I've had and how many years I spent at the academy meeting and learning and growing close to people, and how suddenly life can remove them from your universe. How they can no longer be there because they are elsewhere or because they change dramatically.
Yes, I've noticed that some people are very skillful at maintaining friendships over distance and time, and others are not. Others, wherever they end up being, they make some group of friends and they forget about the old friends. I think it's important to do a little of both, perhaps. Maybe now would be a good time to beg and beseech our listeners.
It might be worth it to directly appeal to the universe through a short prayer.
A prayer for our listeners to call us.
Perhaps briefly reciting the sequence of numerals.
Ritualistically, I suppose.
But in a way that both the universe and our listeners would be able to absorb.
Yes, I believe that sequence of numerals is 617-253-8810.
So let's try reciting those numerals again, but I will recite them in a low, deep voice for the universe to absorb.
Perhaps I should recite them in a high voice at the same time.
That I think would find that appealing.
Six, one, seven, two, five.
And the universe inevitably will answer these prayers.
We certainly need it tonight. I think we need that infusion of energy from the listening audience, or we may indeed wither up and die.
Or leave.
It has been a quiet week, I'd say, in life. Weather here in the Bay State has been wonderfully Mediterranean. Reminds me of the years I spent traveling through Portugal and Spain and Turkey.
Turkey, which used to be called Asia Minor in my youth.
Which, of course, was offensive to the sensibilities of the Turks.
Because it was Little Asia.
Little Asia, and to them, there's nothing minor about their country.
It is very small in comparison to Asia.
But as a country, it's fairly large.
It is. I think that it's interesting, once again, how the names for things can change one's perceptions, how language is so critical, and also how these names have changed over the years. A person recently told me that he was from Ontario, and I asked him if he knew or had any family left in Upper Canada, and he regarded me with a quizzical visage, and I said, of course, Upper Canada, referring to this region. And it was from his confusion that I deduced that he was probably not from Canada. And this gradually led to an unraveling of our relationship, because clearly he was no friend. He was no honest person.
Well, perhaps he was from Lake Ontario.
That's possible. Simply so restful to be here. And
I suspect that our listeners have all fallen asleep, been lulled to sleep by the music.
Let's simply sit back and recall amongst ourselves the listeners that we have spoken to. I remember a particularly interesting conversation that I had with Robert when he was in the habit of calling habitually.
Yes, Robert, I wonder if he's okay. I think about him often.
As I as well do. But I recall how simple and brilliant he said he regarded the lake, which was full of ducks, as a great pit of duck tea. The sun shining in the infusion of duck.
That does sound delicious, I must say, duck tea.
But what a flexible mind. And as far as I know, with no logical training, no training in formal logic. But what a conclusion to reach, that one should tell you that tea is an infusion of tea leaves, but then to tell you that also an infusion of other leaves is also tea, and in fact an infusion of things that are not leaves is also tea. So then the natural progression is a lake full of ducks under the sea, under the sun, becomes duck tea.
Well, I tried this the last time I was in a restaurant. I requested chicken tea as my appetizer. And My server said, "Do you mean chicken soup, sir?" And I said, "Yes, exactly, chicken tea."
Chicken tea. But why not? Why should there not be chicken tea?
If you think about it, it's sort of funny that soup, which is a liquid which we drink from a bowl with a spoon, even when it is a clear broth, whereas a drink is something we drink directly from a cup.
And the difference in eating habits and manners astonishes me also. It is possible for two people to be sitting at the same table in this age, for each to think that the other is being incredibly impolite and that they themselves are an exemplar of manners. I regarded once an elderly woman sitting across from an elderly American woman with American sensibilities firmly ingrained, sitting at the same table with a young South Asian man. Both thought they were being polite. The young South Asian man burped right at the table, and I could see the manifest disgust on the lady's face. And then she took a handkerchief and blew her nose again at the table. And once again, a similar look of disgust. It's astounding, really.
And I've heard it said that the interesting thing about Americans culturally, that's observed by foreigners when they meet us, is that we are particularly open about ourselves, and that in a mere space of several seconds we can open up and tell our life stories. We don't have that kind of European stiffness and politeness where we don't expose ourselves until years and years of intimate relationship with someone.
I think the motivation is what differs. So when an American sees one being secretive about one's life, that is the word that they use. This gentleman is very private, they would say. He does not want me to become close to him. He has secrets. But the European gentleman would say, this person does not wish to burden me with his difficulties and his problems. And so it is always, I think, politeness is a matter of being concerned with the comfort of the people that are around you, but the motivations are so individual and so varied that I think any behavior or many behaviors can be regarded as polite in one culture and impolite in another.
Yes, this has personally caused many difficulties for me in my own travels abroad. I once helped a man in the far reaches of the East with a wagon. His wagon had broken down on the road, and I helped him repair the wagon. And in gratitude, he offered me his daughter as a bride. And at the time, I declined the offer, very politely, I thought. But nevertheless, he was quite offended, I think, by my refusal of his daughter. And I think that that's just sometimes it's just difficult to take into account everyone's sensibilities.
It is a very, very delicate issue, because if you tell the person that you do not wish to marry his daughter, naturally his response is, what's wrong with my daughter? You know, is she not beautiful and intelligent enough? Is she of too weak of a character, too poor, from a poor family? Does her tendency to sing shrilly and to throw knives put you off, he might think? Likewise, if you went and tried to marry his daughter, so the other extreme, he may say, why you? What is so good about you that deserves my knife throwing, screaming daughter.
And of course, in some regions of Central Asia, there had been this ancient tradition of bride kidnapping, where if one young man wanted to marry a particular young lady, he would gather his friends and relatives and find her walking down the street, jump upon her, and take her to his family's home and keep her there for the night until she agreed to marry him. And, of course, once she had been there for the night, her prospects of marrying another man would be very dim, so she would often then agree. And I've heard that in modern times, of course, this practice is now frowned upon a bit. But nevertheless, it's considered a sort of cute way of proposing marriage, where if one has a girlfriend or a fiancé, one might stage a sort of mock kidnapping of the bride-to-be to preserve this ancient tradition.
I can see in ancient times also how this could be regarded as extremely romantic, and particularly how one would value a girl that was protected by several large brothers or bull-like uncles.
And of course, if one has to fight through the brothers and uncles, then one will value the prize all the more so, I suppose.
Precisely, precisely. More so than a daughter who is freely offered, I would think.
Well, it appears that as of yet, the universe and our listeners have failed to answer our plea.
But perhaps in its own way, this was an answer.
The answer of silence. Well, that music led to some uncontrollable sobbing on my part.
Which is why we had to
go silent for a few minutes so I could recover my emotional grounding.
And of course, his crying led me to uncontrollable
laughter.
Fits of laughter, which
yes.
also required a muting of the microphones by our engineer. But fortunately, it's all...
Yes, settled. We had one of our assistants go quickly get some sedatives and inject us with sedatives so that we could continue for the benefit of our listeners, if indeed we have any listeners tonight.
Producer has just asked us to quit playing. What did she call?
She called it suicide-inducing music.
So we're having to choose a different choice.
Yes, perhaps something a little more full of the spirit of life and uplift.
Precisely. Let's see what we can find.
Yes.
If that is at all possible.
I believe it is possible. Oh. Yes, I feel that my mood has now been energized with a spiritual infusion of meaning.
And how could it fail to be the same for myself when I likewise have been in your presence for the past 60 minutes?
Oh, thank you very much, Dr. Jalas. I appreciate that.
You are listening here to Music for Human on WMBR. WMBR Cambridge 88.1 FM. I am a Dr. Jalis Sakran here on Music for Human on a very sleepy but spiritually energetic evening. Come listen again to us next Friday at 7. Stay tuned for Acts Beyond Words. Ma salama from myself and from Professor Levine.
Goodbye.
Safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians and unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.